Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And today, I have a seriously humorous guest. He is David Osborne. David Osborne is an English barrister with over 40 years' experience in private practice. David first practiced law in London and now practices from his chambers in Somerset. He is also a successful author, public performer, and public speaker. Some years ago, he hit the headlines nationwide and made legal history when he delivered his final speech to the jury entirely in verse. And for this, he was dubbed the Barrister Bard by the popular press. He followed this with the publication of a short humorous book on the law entitled No Holds Barred and written under the pseudonym of Ivor Bigwig, QC. This is available as an ebook on Kindle. He appears regularly on radio and television as a legal commentator and has written a number of articles for the national and regional press as well as various journals. And in the recent past, David has also written and presented two legal reviews, both times to full houses. He is regularly in demand as a keynote and after-dinner speaker and has written a short book on the art of public speaking. He is also the author of three humorous books on the law, and his latest, entitled Order in Court, is soon to be released by his American publishers and will be available in all reputable bookstores and on Amazon. And I am so looking forward to learning more about this upcoming book. So welcome to the show, David.
Thank you very much, Pat. A pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Let's begin by heading to the serious side here. Share a little bit about your work as a barrister.
It started off mainly in crime, defending and prosecuting. That went on for quite a number of years. But in the more recent past, I've tended to branch out and more into the civil law and doing what we would call general common law. So the days when I did nothing but crime, I'm afraid, are behind me now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think you're heading in an interesting direction, because tell us a bit then about your final speech that you delivered entirely in verse.
That was not quite impulse, because I had to compose it the night before, but it's one of those trials. It had been going on for about 3 weeks. It was not a particularly serious matter. My client had gate-crashed a party. There was heated moments between the host and my client. A lot of pushing and pulling and going on. The police were called, and so, generally speaking, it was not a particularly serious case. So I thought, after about 3 weeks, the jury needed a bit of livening up, a bit of light mood, so to speak. So I thought, well, I'll give them eight verses in verse of my final speech. And I'm pleased to say, in fact, it was my client pleased to say, that it had the desired effect, and he was found not guilty.
How did they receive that? I mean, were there shocked looks?
They certainly bemused. I think they had expected what went on, but they, judging from their reaction, I think they appreciated it. It lightened the mood a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't trivialize the case, because the eight verses contained my client's defense, so it wasn't just being trivial, but
right.
It worked anyway.
Oh, obviously it did. I would love to have been there to see that. That's a very bold move that worked out.
Yes.
Well, you know, when one thinks of a barrister, one thinks of serious and, quite frankly, a little bit scary with the wig and ornate robe. So it's an interesting juxtaposition, the law and humor. What drew you to meld these two together?
Well, I think it's hard to put my finger on the moment when I decided that humorous books on the law had a place on everybody's bookshelf, so to speak. There is humor in the law. There's not humor necessarily in the criminal act or the criminal offense, but the humor comes from the people, the characters, the defendants, the judge, my opponent, that sort of thing. looking at life and finding humor in that way. So there's a fine line to tread. I think I've trodden it about right between accepting that crime and the commission of crime is a serious matter, but at the same time that there is humor, or what I call a situation comedy.
No, I get that. I would imagine there would be a fine line before you become, as you said before, trivialize it, or just be able to look at life, see the humor in a very serious situation. When did you realize that you were funny?
I've always had, I think, a turn of phrase that I've enjoyed, so to speak, from the very early stages of my career at the bar. I like perhaps to be a bit mischievous. I like to tweak the tail of the more pompous colleagues and occasionally the more pompous judges. And I don't think that does any harm, to be quite honest. But it's like most things that are to do with comedy, it's all to do with timing, really. You choose the right moment. If you choose the wrong moment, then you bomb, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you had no training in any of this. This was just something you felt, and you just seemed to know how to, as you say, turn that phrase at the right time.
Yes. As you say, no training. It's build up, I suppose, these sort of ideas through experience. And as I progressed up the greasy pole, so to speak, I realized that there were times when, particularly with a jury, humor would often win the day, so to speak, or certainly get a sympathetic ear. And so I've tended to use humor in my career as a barrister. And I thought, well, it was time perhaps to start putting some of these ideas and some of these anecdotes into print. And touch wood, they've been well received.
I would imagine you're bringing in a little bit of unexpected, and I think people appreciate that and remember it.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, when was your first debut as, and I will call you a humorist?
Well, I do quite a bit of, I used to still do after dinner speaking, where the assembled multitude expect humor. They don't want a lecture on fairly dry and legal matters. So the initial inspiration, so to speak, comes from after dinner speaking. And then from there, I moved on to, the more humorous, getting it down on paper, humorous stories, and then compiling it into books. So that's really the progression.
Right. And your first book was which one?
Well, I did, after the speech to the jury in Tali and Verse, it was, as you say, a quiet day in the national newspapers. So there was quite a splash about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, on the back of the publicity, I'll write this short book called No Holds Barred, which is subtitled An Idiot's Guide to Advocacy. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let's put that out. It's not a particularly long book. And that sort of rounded the circle, complemented the whole business about the verse and the final speech to the jury. And that was my first venture, so to speak, into a published work.
Right, and then you wrote a second book, The Art of Public Speaking?
Yes, that is conspicuous by its by its shortness. It's a relatively short, almost a pamphlet, actually, about of the art of public speaking, making the obvious points, such as if you haven't struck gold, as they say, if you haven't struck gold after 10 minutes, then stop boring, is what somebody once said. And those sort of ideas that are quite useful for people, because I think in the States, and over here as well, but in the States there's quite a business for, not so much after dinner speaking, but keynote speaking, mm-hmm. And there's a tremendous circuit that goes on. I know that because for a while I had an American agent, media agent, who was based in Santa Monica, and we were going to do things together. And sadly, he had some serious health problems, so nothing came of it. Mm. But I was looking into that as a way of a sort of second career, if you see what I mean. Right. Very popular in the States, and it's becoming more popular here in England. So after dinner, keynote speaking, there's always a demand for good speakers.
Oh, and I love what you say. If you don't strike gold within the first 10 minutes, stop boring. Oh, that is awesome. I'm going to have to remember that. You're funny. So now your newest book is called Order in Court. Give us a synopsis of that.
Well, this is actually the second in a series. The hero of these humorous books is somebody called Toby Potts, who's a young and inexperienced barrister. He's starting out in a career which he hopes is going to be a glittering career. Not all is smoothness and light, though, as inevitably he learns the hard way. But it's based really on his early days as a barrister and trying to find his way. And he comes across a variety of challenges along the lines of a flasher, a chap who can't keep it keep it away from himself. You know what I mean? A disappointed divorcee. There's each chapter is a separate episode, so to speak, of our hero Toby Potts's life as a barrister, and it's weaving human nature into the courtroom drama, if you see what I mean. It seems to work.
Right, and a little peek behind the scenes into the legal system, I would imagine.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Now, is there a little bit of Toby in you or a little bit of you in Toby?
Yes, there's a short answer to that, Pat. the anecdotes are, in many cases, many chapters, based upon my early years as a barrister. Of course, I hasten to add, in case people, when they're reading the book, think I'm a bit of a lightweight when it comes to the law. They are embellished to make them more interesting, hopefully to make them more humorous. But yes, the bones of the anecdotes come from my own experiences.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that much of it must have come from real life events, and then you just add a little flair.
And what they say to, I mean, anybody who's advising somebody who's going to write is write about what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've stuck with that. As you said in your introduction, I've been doing it for 40 years. And it's logical to be writing humorous anecdotes about the legal profession that's been my bread and butter for the last 40 years.
Right, right. Wow, too bad you didn't think about this when you started. You could have taken notes along the way.
Yes, that's right. Too late for regrets, though, as they say.
Oh, I know. I was just thinking about how many of the tiny little moments that slipped by that you might not even remember anymore.
Yeah,
there were so many of them, I'm sure. Now, I viewed your video, which I think is a probably a taped presentation that you did that's called The Law Is an Ass.
Yes.
Oh, that was awesome. I just really came to appreciate you when I saw that, and just perfection. So let's talk about that. Tell us how that built up and how you got started with that.
Again, it was I suppose the showman in me. There's always been a bit of the showman in me, whether I'm in court or out of court, and I'm a great supporter of that occasion. I wanted to support a particularly worthy charity, which is a local hospice that we have here in my part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed to me a good way of raising some money for the hospice. And again, it's me telling anecdotes in a slightly different way, because it was called, as you say, The Law Is an Ass, an evening of legal humor. It's basically how to look the part, how to behave the part, and that sort of thing, which I'm pleased to say went down quite well.
Oh, definitely. And I think what people enjoy was a little bit of your self-deprecation where you know, you were talking about, What were you, the chubbing up and chubbing down?
That's right. Well, one of the problems of being a barrister, I'm afraid, is that it's a very sedentary type existence. You know, we sit down a lot in court. Occasionally we stand up, but we don't move about very much. And then in the olden days, not so much today, but in the olden days, we'd then go off for a good lunch, so to speak, with a glass or three of claret and a glass or three of port, and then come back in the afternoon and so on and so forth. So it is very easy to get out of condition and, as I said, to chub up.
Chub up.
And then it's the devil's own job to chub down.
Now, are you still doing those kind of presentations?
I don't do stage work anymore. Mm-hmm. I still do after-dinner speaking, which goes down quite well. And but no, I think it was time to move on. The thought was, of course, do I, as you sometimes think about it, do I go on tour and take it to a variety of locations, small theatres throughout the country? But I think you really do need to step up to another level. I needed to get an agent, a booking agent, a media agent, and then suddenly it becomes a bit of an ordeal. So I did it twice. That was the second one that you saw once about 6 years earlier. And I did think I'm going to step onto the boards again. But try me. Somebody comes along and says, right, David, come and entertain us in the US of A, and we'll pay you an obscene sum of money to do so. I should be over there like a shot.
Well, I'm very happy that someone captured that and was able to save that to a video that everybody could at least enjoy now.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
for sure. So as you're doing this, what is your goal or kind of your end thought in making public some of the behind-the-scenes look at the legal world?
I suppose my main goal is I'm getting to the stage in my life as far as a practitioner is concerned. I'm still practicing the law, although sort of semi-retired. And I'm looking to take up my writing perhaps more of a full-time work than part-time, and devote more time to writing. So it would be a rather nice idea to have that, not quite the desert island idea, but certainly somewhere nice and quiet and agreeable to write some more books.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get some of your thoughts and tips on tools on writing, but I also wanted to mention while we're here, how do your peers receive you and your humorous look at the profession?
For the most part, very well. Those who don't are usually dry, boring, and people whose views I don't take that seriously, to be quite honest. So there we are. But for the most part, they go down well. As far as judges are concerned, and you've got to be a little bit careful with judges. It is a case of choose your judge, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
Because some judges are as dry as a sea biscuit, and are not going to chuckle at anything. So best to simply play a straight bat to that and move on.
Right.
Other judges, and particularly the judge for the final speech in verse, I knew him. I knew him well. I knew he had a sense of humour, and as that goes down. So the answer is know your man or know your audience. Mm-hmm. If you see what I mean, before being too outrageous.
I just wrote that down as you were speaking. Know your audience. Any great performer knows that, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yep,
sure,
yep. Sure. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about your writing. We have many authors that tune in and listen and are looking for advice from seasoned authors. Your writing process, so as you were writing these books, do you write an outline? Do you just sit down and write from the heart? How does that happen for you?
I choose in broad terms, I have in mind what a particular chapter is going to be about, obviously. But thereafter, I don't do an outline. I sit down and I make a start. It means that I revise several times as we go along. But I don't subscribe to writer's block. I'm a great believer in writing something, anything, even if you delete it and go back again. So that's really the way I go at it. And then my wife, who's my fiercest but most honest critic, will then read the chapter and give me her views on it, and we go on from there. So the answer is make a start, write something, and then if you have to go back, which I do, then you go back and revise. I find that works.
Mm-hmm. And do you write every day, or do you have a set schedule?
Not every day at the moment. I'm doing these blogs, which are sort of daily bread and butter, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Those are slightly more serious. They're on topical issues that are very much in the British media and the press, the European Union, the state of the law, the prison service, things like that, that interest actually everybody, wherever you are. So the blog is more serious. As far as writing any more books are concerned, yes, the answer is book three is provisionally entitled My Learned Friend, mm-hmm. and I am putting some ideas together for that, and I hope it's a slow process. I hope to have something to show my publisher in about 9 months' time, or possibly by the end of the year.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And that's called My Learned Friend?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, so that's what's next for David Osborne, right?
That's what's next, maintaining the Toby Potts theme. I think I've got a few more anecdotes, and I think Toby's got a few more anecdotes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I plan for the rest of the year. But it's a question of finding the time, or making the time,
right.
Between that and doing my other, and doing the day job as well, Pat.
Well, absolutely. You're trying to do many things at the same time. I've heard many authors say they just try to write a little every day just to kind of keep that muscle at work, which obviously
yep.
you're doing as you're writing those blogs, even though they're serious.
That's
yeah,
correct.
Yeah. Now, I ask this of everyone. Do you have an interesting writing quirk? I met one gentleman who calls himself the dark writer because as a child, I guess he would write at night when he was supposed to be sleeping. And to this day, he continues to write in the dark. So
yeah.
I thought that
right.
was crazy. So I always ask everyone who is a writer, author, if you have any interesting writing quirks.
I have a way of signing off each chapter, which I hope is reasonably humorous, by summarizing what has gone on in the chapter with two or three sentences, which indeed is a way I finish off my blog. But for the most part, no. I mean, writing, as you and any of your fellow authors would know, it's tremendously about self-discipline.
Yes.
You've got to be disciplined, and whether you're writing in the dark or writing on the top of a hill, at the end of the day, without self-discipline, nothing's going to happen.
You obviously have self-discipline and are doing a great job with this. Now, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about today that we missed, any direction we want to head into?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm fascinated by your service, and it sounds very interesting. From my point of view, it's nice to talk to the States. I've got a lot of affection for the States. I was at University of McGill, which is sometimes called your 51st state, isn't it? Although, don't repeat that in front of any Canadian. I came down, I've touched base with quite a few cities in the States, and I really enjoy the American way of life. So to that extent, it's nice to touch base with you and with all things American, so to speak. And if I get the opportunity, I'd like to come over and entertain you.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? We'll have to get this out there so that folks can invite you to speak. I would love to have that opportunity. So with that in mind, then, where can folks purchase your books, and where can they learn more about you or invite you to speak?
Well, they've got the books are published through a company based in Louisiana, Strategic Publishing and Rights Acquisition company. The actual link is sbprabooks.com, and then you put my name in at the end of it, and that is, it's called my author page. So it is where you can see me, you can see the book, and you can buy the book from directly from the page.
And then you have a personal website.
It covers really a multitude of sins, which is my professional legal profile, then obviously the books, and also public speaking and public performing. I think you can find the video of my humorous stage review on the website. So that's sort of more about me rather than just writing.
Right, and that's david-osborne.com.
That's right. And Pat, don't forget there's no U in Osborne. Everybody wants to put a U in my name.
Oh.
Not everybody, but a lot of people want to put a U in my name. I think it's because of Ozzy Osborne, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's no U, O-S-B-O-R-N-E, and then that will get you to me.
Oh, I wish we can get you to me, or you us to you. Oh, David, what a pleasure to meet you, at least over the phone, and hopefully someday in person. And just thank you so much for taking the time to share you and your new book and your speaking events with our listeners.
Well, you're very kind, Pat. It's been a great pleasure chatting to you.
If you have something to say or share and would like to be interviewed, we will feature you too on the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. Just visit the website speakuptalkradio.com or leave a message on our studio line 440-725-5462. Go ahead, speak up.